ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife. News breakdown.
Well, the Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, will be making a speech at the Lowy Institute on foreign investment tomorrow, apparently changing the rules on foreign investment with the intention of, as he puts it, to strengthen the regime where we need to, streamline it where we can, and make it more transparent, his words. Now, one focus will be countering national security threats, which the Treasurer says are increasing due to intensifying geopolitical competition, and addressing the risks to Australia's national interests from foreign investment. Well, joining us tonight for Nightlife News Breakdown again is Mark Kenny, Cameratimus political analyst, professor at the ANU's Australian Studies Institute, and host of the Democracy Sausage podcast. Mark, good evening. Welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you, Philip. Good evening to you.
Well, you're a close watcher of these matters. How big are these changes to the foreign investment framework?
Well, yes, I don't know that I'd call myself an actual expert in foreign investment law, but I'll say this. The message that we seem to be likely to get from the Treasurer tomorrow is very much one of there's a lot of atmospherics around it. There will be some detail, and it will be in the detail, I guess, that we'll be able to make a more informed assessment about, you know, how material these changes are rather than just how rhetorical. But rhetorical changes in this space do matter anyway. The messages that that governments, nation states send out to the world about how welcome investment is and what conditions will attach to investment, foreign investment, are important, right? So I think it's in a fairly significant speech that the Treasurer is making tomorrow, and he's emphasising things like security, a very strong emphasis on national security, both in the sort of literal sense of national security, but also in the sense of economic security, making our economy and our supply chains more robust. And this is a theme we see coming out in a number of different areas of government messaging at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, Australia has always relied on foreign investment. We like it. We want it. In fact, we need it.
We love it.
We love it, indeed. And without it, we wouldn't have the economy we do, quite frankly. What's he saying he's going to do? What are the actual changes?
Well, there's going to be changes to strengthen, streamline, and make more transparent the regime of foreign investment. So if you're a company, an investor looking to invest in Australia in a particular, buy a particular asset or set up here, invest in companies that are perhaps already here, then the government has an interest in that. The federal government takes an interest in that in terms of the potential security implications of that, depending on from whence you come as an investor, and also depending on the nature of the industry that you're investing in, that particular sector. It may have defence implications. For example, it may be an operation that would be operating near a defence facility, and that would be a matter that would attract the interest of the government in terms of whether it said yea or nay to things. There's also, you know, sectors of the economy, emergent technology, infrastructure, sensitive data sets, for example, are things that the Treasurer will talk about tomorrow. So those sort of considerations will be beefed up, and the government will be looking to make it, you know, strengthen its own powers and make clearer those powers so that investors can see it. Some of those powers will be interesting in the sense that the Treasury will be have greater capacity for on-site visits, so they can make sure that companies that have been granted permission to invest in Australia, that have taken a stake in the Australian economy in some way, that they are continuing to comply with the conditions of their entry into Australia. That's interesting in itself. So there'll be beefed up sort of on-site visits from Treasury, and there'll be a new call-in power, or at least a call-in power that exists, I think, but beefed up, where the Treasurer could literally require a foreign investor to divest if, in fact, the situation had changed. Now, that situation could change either in terms of what that company is doing, perhaps what the technology has developed a capacity to do, or it might be that the country from which that investor comes has become quite hostile to Australia, and that changes the security calculus about what access and information they should have in the Australian economy. So it's a message about making all of these things clear. And, of course, he's also talking about making it clearer how much tax they have to pay, and the government will have a particular eye for applications that seek to have very complicated structures, because those complicated structures can sometimes be used to minimise tax.
As we know, that's right.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. So it looks like it all fits, I think, into a broader theme that we're seeing from this government, and not just from this government, I might say, from most Western democratic governments at the moment, where they're looking to back winners a bit more than was the case.
The future made in Australia stuff, you mean?
Precisely. And we see this announcement that's only come out today about the quantum computer that's to be built in Brisbane by this company, with a very hefty swag of public money coming in, nearly $1 billion in two halves, one from the Queensland government, one from the federal government. And, you know, that's really for emergent technology that is yet to be fully proved. And, there's some pretty stringent conditions around that. But we're seeing government leaning in now in some of these ways. And we see it with Joe Biden's $520 billion Inflation Reduction Act. And we see it with other countries. We saw Ursula von der Leyen from the EU talking about making supply chains much more local in Europe and in European countries. So there's very much a mood around the world at the moment, and particularly in democracies that have been, you know, sort of almost evangelically free trade and all of that over the last several decades, that are now starting to realise after COVID and with the change in the economic and the national security situation, or international security situation, they're now starting to realise that there are some costs to not making some things in your country, and they can become very apparent at times like these.
Indeed they can. All right. Now, on to this big domestic issue. The Prime Minister's meeting with state and territory leaders in the National Cabinet tomorrow it's a specially convened National Cabinet to discuss what measures should be introduced to try and reduce violence against women. Mark, the Prime Minister's been talking about practical, immediate measures. They've ruled out a royal commission. You'd think bail law reform might be at the top of the list, wouldn't you? Mind you, the federal government's not responsible for bail laws, but there you go.
Good point. But that's the point of National Cabinet, I suppose, is that it is very much about, sort of coordinating the states and having all governments working, essentially, you know, pedalling along in the same peloton. And we saw that usefully through the pandemic, when, of course, it became very clear, very quickly, that most of the critical decisions that people were going to feel in relation to emergency measures around the pandemic were enacted by state governments, because
right.
State governments had that jurisdiction. It's also the same here with the criminal jurisdiction. And so, as you say, things like bail laws are within the province of the states. But everyone agrees, I think, certainly all the governments agree, and all right-thinking people agree, the situation at the moment in this country with respect to domestic violence and the appalling loss of life that we've seen, violence of men on women, is a national crisis. That much is agreed, and it's really just now a question of what material changes
what do we do
can
about?
You make.
Hmm.
Yeah, what can you do? And as you say, bail laws is one of those things, because there have been horrible instances of of people who've been charged with a violent act or with some intimidatory behaviour, and who have then, whilst on bail, gone on and re-offended against the victim.
The trouble is, it's not simple, is it? It's not so simply solved. There's a lot of black and white thinking here in an area that's actually hugely tinged with grey, isn't there?
I think that's true, but I think the sort of balance here is shifting toward the victim rather than the accused, and I think that is where society probably is as well. I would be surprised if it isn't. Now, that may lead to someone who's been wrongly charged, at least in theory, it may lead to someone who's been wrongly charged being detained when they would have otherwise been released on bail and subsequently found not to have been guilty of whatever it was that they've been accused of. But I think most governments, most right-thinking people would say that's a risk worth taking given the dire consequences of the alternative, which we see playing out every day now with these. I mean, even tonight's news bulletins, you know, there was a sort of a sickening run of stories of different incidents of violence against women. So it's a big thing. There's also going to be talk about at this meeting tomorrow about electronic monitoring of accused and violent offenders, looking at ways of the states coordinating so that they can keep track of people once they move out of this one state into another state. And there's some talk about, looking at some of the causes of this, perhaps the domestic tensions that are associated with the economic situation at the moment, but also some of the causative factors or at least exacerbating factors like violent content on the internet and the desensitization and other potential radicalization, I suppose, or angertainment that is coming out of the internet, and looking at all of these things. So it will be interesting to see if there is, there's a lot of talk about practical immediate measures. It will be interesting to see
what they are.
Significant practical immediate measures.
I agree. Don't necessarily hold your breath, I would suspect. another budget airline has gone bust. In a long history of budget airlines going, well, not long history of airlines going bust in Australia, there are, I think when someone counted them up, hundreds of airlines over the course of it that have gone bust in Australia. But now Bonza has gone bust.
Come unstuck.
Gone bust as well. Looks like the federal government isn't keen on a taxpayer bailout either. Here's the federal transport minister, Catherine King.
Can we bail out Bonza right at this minute? That is not something that the government has before us. We'll talk to the administrators, but I would say that, it is from time to time, these smaller players do come into the market and it is a challenging market.
Yes, it is. Others disagree, of course, especially considering the support the major airlines have received over the recent years, viz Qantas, and how much taxpayer cash has been tipped into that. Here's National Secretary of the Transport Workers Union, Michael Caine.
What we have in aviation right now is Qantas, when times are tough, going cap in hand to the government asking for bailouts, and when times are good, like they are now for Qantas, telling everyone, get your hands off our profits. That has to stop. We have to even out these peaks and troughs. We have to support companies that are trying their best to carve out a good future for Australia in the aviation sector, servicing regional communities. This is a very large island. Aviation is critical infrastructure, and we've got an aviation industry that's broken. Today, we've got passengers left stranded again and workers with their jobs on the line yet again.
As I say, though, it's not an odd occurrence. This is, another chapter in a long, very long saga of airline collapses. I mean, it's important to regional populations, though. This is the Queensland leader of Katter's Australian Party. His name's Robbie Katter, on the issues that low-cost carriers face.
I think we've got to look at the market conditions that have been created for anyone trying to enter the market. I think that's the real point to be made here, not so much everyone just piggy-piling on Bonza and saying that it's just a function of their incompetence.
Well, Mark, very tight margins, and maybe Bonza just made the wrong decisions. Maybe they had the wrong aircraft. They had big 737s. Maybe they should have gone for smaller ones. I mean, there's a million decisions along the line, aren't there? We're not running the airline. They were, but maybe they just made a mistake. Maybe they made mistakes like others before them.
Well, I think it's the truth probably lies between all of these things. In a sense, what Michael Caine says is right. The aviation industry is broken, but it's also true to say that it is a function of the country as we have it. It is a huge island. It is a small population. People are spread out in various places. It is uneconomic, or at least very marginal, to provide services to some of these smaller locations. There just isn't the capacity or the economy of scale, I should say, associated with that. So it's always quite difficult. Some aviation, sort of hard-nosed aviation experts have made the point that you'd need a population three or four times the size of ours before you start to get into a viable situation for more than one or two airlines and of any significance. So, these smaller players do come along. There are huge costs, as we know. There are huge capital costs. Well, you know, one of the reasons for selling off Qantas, of course, back when TAA, I think, was merged into it and then selling off Qantas, was that the capital costs of the capital demands of running airlines are absolutely massive. And this was, you know, essentially coming out of the taxpayers' pocket. There was no real dividend coming back from Qantas because it was even then marginal. We've seen other airlines, I think Virgin went into administration for a period of time during the COVID shutdowns, quite understandably. No one could fly. And we, as you say, there have been a number of other airlines. I can remember one called Compass and, of course, Ansett, the other one in the duopoly back in the, you know, back before the 80s or 90s. So it's a really tough environment in which to operate. And I think, to be fair to Bonza, and I don't sort of know all the details here, but my understanding is it's not just decisions they made. Perhaps they did have the wrong aircraft. I think they had four of those larger aircraft. But I think some circumstances changed at the other end in terms of the investors who had owned those planes. And it may well be that things got a bit marginal for people at the other end of the investment chain here, and they've decided to call in their assets because they need the money.
Yeah, there does seem to be that element of it as well. All right, meantime, of course, regional Australians are less well served, as we know. And so the story continues. Does anything change? Mark Kenny, always great to talk. Thank you.
Thanks, Philip.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.